From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Ray Suarez. In today for Michael Krasny, California Governor Jerry Brown released a $122.5 billion budget proposal Tuesday with a mix of optimism and prudence.
Compared to many other places in the world, particularly places like Europe, where they're struggling with no growth, California is growing. But less than we expected.
With the state projected to run a $1.6 billion deficit, Brown's budget rolls back some planned spending increases for education, housing, and other areas. And though he didn't mention Donald Trump by name, he warned of a changing political climate in D.C. Coming up on Forum, we'll break down the budget, take your calls and questions, all coming up next on Forum after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Ray Suarez, sitting in one last day for Michael Krasny. He'll be back in this chair Tuesday. To an outsider, and make no mistake, I am an outsider, everything about California seems massive, and the budget's no exception. This coming fiscal year, 2017-18, the government of California plans to spend just under $180 billion. That's about $4,500 for every person in the state. Governor Jerry Brown says right now, the budget he's submitting to the legislature for consideration sees California spending up to $2 billion more than it collects. His challenge to state House members is to close that gap, the first after four straight years of budgets in surplus, or at least balanced. For a decade, from 2003 to 2013, there were no surpluses and there were oceans of red ink. The era encompassed the administrations of Gray Davis, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the return of Jerry Brown. Again, as an outsider, I never quite understood how it was debt that doomed Davis. Yet Schwarzenegger paid for his promises with red ink, borrowing, and bond issues, and was reelected in 2006. Some of it's got to be luck and timing. Jerry Brown has presided over the state during a national economic recovery. Revenues have been strong enough to meet ambitious spending plans and even put a little money away for a rainy day. With this week's release of the 17-18 budget, we're going to take a look at its promises, its problems, and what it says about the priorities and politics of the state that's home to one out of every eight Americans. Do you have questions or comments about California's budget, about why it allocates as much or as little as it does for certain areas? Our number, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. We'll be hearing from a lot of different voices this hour, including H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director of External Affairs for the state's Department of Finance, and Jessica Calafati, education reporter for Cal Matters. But first, I'm joined by KQED's Marisa Lagos from our California Politics and Government desk. Great to have you with us.
Good morning.
The two different numbers. Let's start real basic. Real basic.
You don't want to start with the philosophical debate over Gray Davis and Schwarzenegger?
Why is it that I keep reading, to bone up for this hour, two different figures about California's spending in the coming fiscal year?
Right. So we basically have a general fund, which is, if you could think of it as California's checking account. It's where most of the money, tax money, goes. It's where education money comes out of. It's where the bulk of the money comes in and is spent. And then you have special funds, things that are, say, tolls that have to go back to a specific bridge or something that's earmarked for the purpose for which it's collected. And in the third sort of a silo are bond funds. And so those are, again, very specific, earmarked for something that voters or lawmakers approved, it doesn't have as much wiggle room. I should say our general fund doesn't have a ton of wiggle room either because of Prop 98, which is the education funding formula passed in the late 80s. It essentially guarantees upwards of, let's say, I think it's 40% or more of it can fluctuate, but of general fund dollars to K through 12 and community college education. So it's, you know, it's a huge amount of money, but ultimately what the governor and lawmakers end up tinkering with every year, given a lot of the constrictions around spending and Prop 98 and other ballot measures that have prescribed how money can be spent, ends up being, you know, in the low billions instead of the tens of billions usually.
The California budget is framed, if I read it correctly, based in part on the expectation of a very large influx of cash from the federal government. And granted, a lot of that collected in the first place from Californians.
Yeah, we only get back 78 cents on every dollar we send to D.C.
But how much Washington money goes into that overall big figure?
A lot. And it depends on, I mean, federal money flows through so many different sort of agencies and organizations. I think the big question mark this year is the $20 billion we get in healthcare funds. There's other money, billions, that we get from D.C. that could potentially change under this Congress, but probably won't in the near term. I think the big question mark is that $20 billion, which, you know, in the context of $180 billion budget, let's just round up since we're talking in billions anyway, is still a huge chunk of change. And so I think that that is where, you know, there's problems looming for California. Law enforcement money is another area where a Trump administration and Republican Congress could potentially be undercut because of this whole sanctuary city issue, which we could get into. But, you know, California sends a lot of money to Washington, gets a lot back, and also gets a lot of money from its own taxpayers.
Is there anything in this spending plan that the average person is going to notice? Is there going to be something that happens in the coming fiscal year where you say, oh, I see that we're not spending as much or spending more on this part of my daily life in this state?
I think your average sort of middle to upper class Californian, I would say probably not. Maybe they might benefit if there's actually a transportation deal that could be reached between lawmakers and the governor, which is something, you know, we should talk about. I think that's going to be a big priority. I think the people, unfortunately, who generally are most impacted and feel sort of on a day-to-day basis the impacts of any state budget tend to be the poor, people who benefit from welfare programs, from subsidies, things like that. You know, there's proposals in here to try to keep costs down around childcare, so they won't be increasing childcare rates for providers that are funded through the state. You know, that's probably mostly not going to affect maybe the parents that go to those centers, but the workers there, they may not, you know, get a cost of living increase, or they may not be able to staff up as much. On other stuff, yeah, we haven't seen an increase to the state's SSI disability payments for years since the recession. And so those, you know, these are people who are living on less than $800 a month in some cases. And so I think those folks not seeing an increase is where they'll feel it. But, you know, compared to 5-6 years ago when everything was cuts, 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 and it was something that you could really see. I mean, classroom spending is increasing. We do have a lot of areas where the budget is growing just by virtue of cost increasing and time moving forward, essentially.
That's KQED's Marisa Lagos. Let me bring in Jessica Calafati from CalMatters and H.D. Palmer from the state's Department of Finance. H.D. Palmer, is this a stay-the-course budget, or are there some big changes?
It is a lot of a stay-the-course budget, Ray, in the sense that are not cutting in the sense that we were during the depths of the recession, as Marisa just suggested. But we're also not overcommitting the state to higher levels of spending that we don't think are going to be sustainable over the long haul. We are very cognizant of the fact that there are a number of fiscal pressures that are out there that could dramatically swing the state's budget. We've alluded to some of them already. The uncertainty at this point over what changes in federal policy will be in Washington and how that could affect the state budget. The biggest of those, obviously, is what may or may not happen to the Affordable Care Act. The fact that our cash receipts through December were more than $1 billion below where we projected they would be at the time the budget was passed last June. The fact that our economic expansion is run longer by about 2.5 years than the average length of a California economic expansion in the post-World War II era. We're 2.5 years past that five-year average. And lastly, the perennial issue that we've got to take a look at is what's going to happen with the stock market. We have a very progressive tax system in the state, and a very small sliver of taxpayers contributes the bulk of our personal income tax. Just 1% of the tax returns that are filed in California comprise about 48% of all of the personal income tax that's paid in the state. And unlike those of us whose income is derived primarily from wages and salaries, a lot of the income from that high income, small sliver of taxpayers comes from things like capital gains and stock options. So what happens on Wall Street can have a very dramatic effect, good or bad, in terms of what the state's revenue picture looks like.
Jessica,
so
Calafati,
all of those things taken together, are cautionary notes that we think augur for a prudent approach to the budget.
Education is one area that's particularly politically sensitive. California has more students than most states have people. Jessica, what does the picture look like for the coming year?
So K-12 funding is going to be slightly lower than what schools had anticipated, but schools are still expected to get a couple of billion dollars more than they got last year, which is good news. So as we move closer to fully funding the local control funding formula, which is a big change in the way that we distribute money to schools, schools have something to be pleased about, but they sort of have their caution lights on as well, because as HD explained, the tide is starting to change.
And in post-secondary education, often a rumpus in California, overspending there?
Yes. So there's going to be a big debate over the next couple of months about tuition and fee increases. And this budget makes a change to something called the Middle Class Scholarship Program, or proposes a change where we would eliminate this scholarship program for middle class families.
Our number, 866-733-6786. We'll go first to Oakland. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I think possibly you've at least partially answered my question. I listened to Maurice's piece yesterday about the looming possibility of a budget deficit, and I was just baffled because I'm sitting here going, look, the stock market is roaring. We get a very high percentage of our revenues from capital gains tax. The property values are going up, so even with Prop 13, you've got more money coming in from that. And Jerry Brown has been holding the line on spending for several years now, and so it's not like we're trying to, you know, make up for some bad situation the last couple of years. So, you know, I'm listening to it like we're going to be in a deficit. And I'm like, well, how could we possibly be in a deficit in this situation?
Well, H.D. Palmer, maybe you can help Michael out on why a roaring stock market is not sluicing enormous money into the state's coffers.
Michael's reaction is like one we've heard a lot of, because the economy's doing okay. The stock market we've seen has been doing well lately. By the way, we just passed Proposition 55 in November, which is continuing certain higher tax levels. How in the world can we be in a deficit? Well, a couple of things contributed to that. We are seeing year-over-year growth in state revenues, to be clear. But we are seeing slower growth than we saw or we forecast back when the last budget forecast was done in the spring of last year. And that's because we've seen things like recent growth in wages has been dominated by workers at the lower end of the wage spectrum who pay lower taxes. That there's still volatility at the high end, as we mentioned a moment ago. But we've seen declines in terms of the rate of growth of the big three revenue sources that we've seen: personal income tax, sales tax, and corporation tax. On the spending side, we've got increased pressures that we recognize in a variety of areas. Caseload for some of the programs that are health related, the biggest one being the so-called optional expansion in Medi-Cal. That's something that the state went into willingly because we have been at the forefront of implementing federal health care reform in California. Our costs are going to roughly double from the state's general fund year over year because the federal share of that portion of the health care population that's covered under Medi-Cal, the state's version of Medicaid, the federal share of cost goes down from 100%. They've been footing the full bill down to 95% this year and 90% next year. So the state's got to take up a greater share of costs, and that's contributing to some of the spending growth as well. Taken together, we're looking at, compared to last year, a budget deficit in the neighborhood of about $1.6 billion. So we've proposed a number of steps, again, not really the kind of cuts that we saw during the depths of the recession, but more pulling back on some spending proposals that we had made in the past budget, not going forward with other new proposals, and as Jessica indicated, slowing the rate of growth in spending on K through 14 education while still providing a year-over increase in spending for K through 14 education of about $2.1 billion.
Marisa Longos?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, like, HD, of course, gave a very detailed answer, but I think for your average citizen, you know, the thing to understand is, much like your budget at home, costs grow year over year, right? And so even if things are going just as well on the revenue side or around the same place, there's a lot of cost pressures on government in terms of, you know, the cost of everything, you know, from their bills in buildings and schools in terms of heating and electricity and all those things that you pay at home, to wages going up. And, you know, so we never have a year where the state budget can really stay at the same exact level unless they make cuts.
It's only been out for a very short time. Have Republicans in Sacramento already started to put their markers out, signal their pleasure or displeasure at various parts of the proposal?
Oh, yeah. They didn't even wait for the governor to stop talking, I think, before they were outside ready to give us their reaction. You know, it's interesting. I think that Republicans, after really not getting along that well with Arnold Schwarzenegger, you mentioned some of his reliance on debt and other things, have a bit of a mixed feelings about Jerry Brown, because he is so fiscally prudent and he has been very sort of conservative in his budget estimates. And every year, I think they want to make sure that they stress that they appreciate that. Of course, you know, they think that there is still sort of waste and abuse that could be cut in areas. Transportation, as I mentioned, is going to be a big talking point in the coming months, something that will probably get tackled in some ways sort of outside of the normal budget process, which doesn't really get going until May, June. And that's an area where both Democrats, who do hold a two-thirds majority, and the governor are proposing slightly different proposals, but in the same vein of increasing the gas tax and potentially some car registration fees, kind of changing things around in some ways to help fund the state's $130 billion roads and bridges needs. And so they're not happy with that. They would like to see, you know, no new taxes. They think that there's a lot more savings that could happen at Caltrans and some of the other Department of Transportation areas, which the governor does say in his budget that he thinks they can save some money on. But, you know, ultimately, Republicans don't have that much power in Sacramento right now. There's, as I said, a two-thirds majority in both houses of Democrats, which means they can actually pass taxes without a single Republican vote. They can pass urgency measures. And so I think the question becomes this year for the GOP up there, how do they position themselves to be relevant?
Speaking of the legislature, we're now joined by David Chu, the California State Assembly member from District 17, covers much of the eastern side of San Francisco. Assemblyman, welcome to the program.
Good morning, everyone.
First look at the budget. What do you think?
Well, Governor Brown has, again, taken a long view on our state's fiscal health with a very cautious, fiscally conservative budget. And we certainly understand that. Assembly Democrats, we helped to create our state's rainy day fund, which right now, under this budget, would be funded close to the tune of $8 billion. Now, that being said, we have certainly noticed in the legislature that much of what has been proposed to be cut, several billion dollars worth, are proposals that we have put forth as legislative Democrats in the area of education and affordable housing, college grants, child care, and certainly there will be some significant negotiations in the coming months about this.
Well, the budget has to be brought into balance. Where would you rather see the cuts made? If this is the plan, and as the governor notes, while still growing, California's economy is growing more slowly, where do you see places where those savings could be made instead?
Well, let me say, you know, as you said at the beginning of the program, this is a budget close to $180 billion. But the $3 billion or so that have been proposed to be cut have been with regards to a lot of our legislative Democratic proposals. I'll mention one area. In the area of housing, the governor's proposal doesn't offer anything new to millions of Californians who are struggling every month to pay the rent or to find a home that they can afford. And part of the reason why we've seen sales tax numbers go down is because Californians don't have any discretionary income to pay for other things, and high costs for housing around the state are depressing our ability to collect sales taxes. And so many of us think that we have to make good targeted investments, particularly for those who are struggling, particularly for the next generation of Californians when it comes to K-12 or college grants or child care that we're not making. And we'll have a conversation about exactly what the governor has wanted to prioritize in his $177 billion budget and where we think we ought to as well.
Your district includes some of the highest priced real estate on planet Earth, certainly in the United States. Do Californians look at moving as enough of an option? And I ask this as an outsider. In a lot of regards, economists have looked at the national economy and looked at hot spots of very high cost of living and said, well, in previous downturns, people have just moved. They moved from Chicago to Dallas. They moved from Boston to Florida. Do Californians hit the road in search of more affordable places to live?
I think we have started to see that. We haven't necessarily seen it as much with our wealthiest Californians, but we have certainly seen it with struggling Californians who are trying to find a way to put a roof over their heads and just get by, and who are tired of two-hour commutes on streets that are massively congested because we haven't figured out yet how to invest in transportation. So there are a number of areas, particularly transportation and affordable housing, which are top priorities for Assembly Democrats, and we are going to be working with the governor hopefully this year to resolve these crises.
Marisa, quick comment?
Yeah, I just want to say, every year the governor's proposal is his opening salvo, and there is going to be negotiations. The Assembly in particular, led by Chu and others, have made clear that housing is a priority. As I was reading through the governor's budget, I really did notice that he did leave an opening for this. He said that, there's not going to be money out of the general fund for affordable housing development, but he said that if there could be other areas, and I know that Assemblyman Chu has, for example, already introduced a bill that would disallow a tax credit on second homes, on vacation homes. So maybe there is area here for the governor and lawmakers to come together in the coming months and find some solutions. I think that will depend on the governor's side. He wants to see them sort of loosen up some regulations around development, which is something that which is why this issue hit a roadblock last year.
Quickly, before I let you go, Assemblyman, the clock's ticking. When does this have to be done by?
This has to be done by early summer. We will be having budget committee meetings starting in the February, March timeframe. We will see a revision to the estimates on the budget in May when the governor rolls that out. And then in early June, that's where the rubber will hit the road with a lot of these discussions. And hopefully we will pass a budget as we have been doing in recent years in June.
Assemblyman David Chu, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about California's 2017-18 budget, which Governor Jerry Brown unveiled on Tuesday, along with a projected $1.6 billion deficit. We want to hear from you. What are your questions about California's budget and the deficit, and why the state allocates as much or as little as it does in certain areas? Our number, 866-733-6786, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. I'm Ray Suarez in for Michael Krasny, and you're listening to KQED Public Radio. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Ray Suarez in today for Michael Krasny. We're talking about California's 2017-18 budget, which Governor Brown unveiled Tuesday, along with a projected $1.6 billion deficit. Joining us to talk about this are KQED's Marisa Lagos, H.D. Palmer from the California Department of Finance, and Jessica Calafati, a reporter for Cal Matters. Our number, 866-733-6786. Joan is with us now from San Jose. How are you?
Hi. Fine. I want to find out if I'm right in that one half or 50% of our budget goes for education, that's my understanding, leaving only 50% for the environment, global warming, transportation, our roads are in terrible condition, science, technology, medicine, the drought, water, looking, rethinking lack of snowpack, prisons, emergency housing for homeless people, emergency services in case of earthquake and disaster, and all other services. Is this true? And our schools keep asking for more and more money. Maybe, and not only that, but the schools, the education is very mediocre compared with some third world countries where students sit on the dirt and learn. So I want to know, should we rethink and revamp our educational system? And do we need to give them more than 50%? How much of our budget do they want? 75%? 100%?
Jessica Califati?
Sure. So I think the number is 40% of the budget that goes to K to 14 schools. And believe it or not, California's spending per pupil is actually much lower than in many other states. And part of the problem there is Prop 13, which we passed a number of decades ago and limits municipalities' ability to raise money for schools at the local level. So the state is sort of doing the best that it can, but the budget is constricted in that we have to spend a certain proportion on K-12 schools, and that means less money for the many other worthy priorities that you mentioned.
And, right, Joan ran down a list of things facing California, but California has, at the same time, an enormous number of people who are between 4 and 18 years old, and a large and fast-growing segment of its households that consist of only older adults. Households with no children, for whom schools are now a cost with a harder-to-see return. Does that make the politics around this different, Jessica?
Of course. I mean, you're going to have families who say we need to spend more on our education and our children, and you have older adults with fixed incomes who say we just can't take it anymore. We need help too. And there's that tug and pull every time you're talking about a budget. It's a really tough issue.
I mean, I don't see often, though, the point the caller made is made that clearly. I think that, you know, there are competing priorities and everybody's sort of fighting for a piece of the pie. But you don't generally see folks who, you know, advocate for some of these welfare programs just going head to head with the education folks. A lot of times they're on the same board saying, let's just raise taxes all around. And I will note, like, looking at the numbers, we talked earlier that there are different buckets, right? So general fund, yes, education gets by far the most money in this proposal, $52 billion. But if you actually look at total spending, healthcare gets way more. We're close to $60 billion in this next fiscal year. A lot of that does come from the federal government. We have greatly expanded Medi-Cal, our Medicaid program in California the last few years. We also offer subsidies on the exchange. We have a lot of health and human services programs. And then another area the caller mentioned, environmental issues, I would just note, you know, a lot of money for that is coming out of cap and trade funds, which is something the governor wants the legislature to reauthorize this year. There are other sort of special funds, bond funding. So it's not as if these areas are not getting any money spent on them, right? It's just that sometimes we only talk about the general fund and we sort of leave out this other, you know, really almost third of the budget.
H.D. Palmer, unless I miss my guess, if I sat with a map of the state of California, there are probably counties with a very high percentage of the overall population consisting of school-aged children, and counties where it's relatively low. Are we going to see this fight over K to 12, but also about post-secondary education sharpening in coming years as people who don't see it as an investment in their own future fight about taxes?
Well, there are clearly going to be demographic changes, as you correctly note, Ray. One of the things involving education funding, and Marisa alluded to this earlier, is that voters back in 1988 passed something called Proposition 98, which said under the California Constitution, a fixed share of proceeds from general fund as well as local property tax are dedicated to go to K through 12 schools and community colleges. So in order to change a lot of that formula, you would have to go back to the voters to make that change. Now, the legislature, if they so choose to, can suspend the provisions for a year. But pretty much that's locked into the Constitution and into state spending. In terms of the mix of urban versus rural, as you're suggesting about higher versus lower populated counties, one of the things that the governor has focused on is not so much that, but also those school districts that have higher percentages of children who are English learners and children who come from low-income families as measured by their ability to receive free or reduced-price meals. The studies have indicated that, that those students have higher challenges of learning than other students. And so what the so-called local control funding formula is that Jessica talked about a while ago is probably the biggest reform in state education spending in a generation, whereby each school district will get increases on a year-over-year basis, but there is a higher concentration of that growth that is targeted to those districts that have higher percentages of those students who are either from low-income families, English learners, or who come from foster families, because the targeted growth on those, while everybody's going to be receiving more money, is designed to see that those students who have the greatest challenges have the greatest opportunity to achieve. And so that continues to be a focus of the governor's budget in terms of education spending.
Listeners have been weighing in. Beth writes, "We hear if California were a country, we would be the 7th richest country in the world. Yet as a state, we have a $1 billion deficit. Something's wrong when we as a wealthy state cannot meet all our obligations." Another listener comments, "Costs going up? California has the highest taxes in the country and keeps spending more. That is the reason for the deficit." 866-733-6786. We go now to Oakland. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment on the transportation deal, and specifically on the disconnect that I see between transportation and something that's come up a couple times, which is climate. When we look at the new funding that is proposed, it largely goes to the same sorts of highway projects that we've seen in the past. And I think that with transportation as the largest source of our climate emissions in this state, we need to have a more forward-looking transportation spending plan. The governor and the legislature have been very willing to take our climate funding from cap and trade and invest that into transportation projects. But when we're looking at this new package of taxes and fees coming up to specifically fund transportation, yes, we need to fix our roads, but we don't see that money going into running buses and trains, into the kinds of forward-looking solutions that, frankly, we really need if we're going to meet the ambitious climate goals and be the global leaders that our governor and our legislature keep saying that we are.
I was kind of hoping to be shot through an aluminum tube at 700 miles an hour on this visit, but apparently that thing isn't ready yet that I keep reading about in my home in Washington. California, obviously, has to move around more people than any place else and has to move them, in many cases, longer distances, and has the burden of history on its shoulders. Marisa, what are the fights in the state? What are the regional rivalries about how a dollar that goes to transportation gets spent?
Yeah, so I mean, I think in general, there's sort of two issues. There's the issue of improving transit and sort of greener opportunities that the caller is talking about. And then there's just the dilapidated states of our existing roads and highways. And I think, you know, lawmakers and policymakers feel like both of these issues need attention. You know, I think you could make the argument that road repairs do have positive environmental impacts because, you know, you can improve fuel efficiency and other issues. But yeah, the way a lot of these, you know, cap and trade funds are spent has been a big debate in the Capitol. Some of it has focused not really around what the caller's speaking of, but more this issue of, like, is there equity in how we distribute these funds? So there has been a lot of not fighting, but debate among lawmakers, you know, who are maybe from poorer districts, more rural areas, or places that have been historically more polluted by our environmental challenges, and who don't feel like they have historically gotten the benefits of a lot of these programs. Talk about, you know, a lot of the subsidies that have been given out around hybrid vehicles and other sort of more fuel efficient cars have mostly gone to the wealthy. And so last year, lawmakers and the governor did pass a new climate change law that tries to address some of this. They are proposing in this budget to put more money into these underserved communities. But I think, again, there is going to be this debate during
this transportation conversation about, you know, what portion of this should go into roads? Should we be expanding highways in some areas? There's always, you know, tension between the coast and the rural areas. There's always tension between LA and San Francisco, the North and the South. And I think we'll see all of that play out in this transportation conversation. But I will say in that area, as with housing, you know, like LA and San Francisco have more in common than San Francisco and Fresno.
Los Angeles is next. Paul, welcome to Forum.
Thank you. My questions center around why we discuss all the time about the need to raise taxes, which we seem to do constantly. We have very high taxes here. There isn't much discussion about the fact that the high taxes, the overburdensome regulation, and the litigious nature of California is driving successful taxpaying businesses out of the state. I represent several businesses, and almost every one of them that doesn't have to be here, either because they're a restaurant or retail, is looking for ways to get out of California. The taxes are killing them. They're constantly worried about lawsuits. The trial lawyers have such power in Sacramento. We have some regular laws that make it very difficult to operate here, very costly. And so many businesses are saying, I give up. And we can look at Nissan, we can look at Toyota, huge tax-paying businesses that are getting out. And we have this huge burden on the middle class. Yes, they're struggling to make ends meet. We have a great welfare system. We have Medicaid. We have all these benefits for the poor, plus good weather, so they want to be here. But the middle class who can't afford to live here are leaving and are looking for ways to leave. I know many people that have already moved to Nevada, to Oregon, to Washington, to Texas, to escape California. If you take away the weather, what is it we have going for us? So why isn't there any discussion about that?
H.D. Palmer?
Well, I think there has been a discussion about some of the issues that the caller raises. One of them I would point out is affordable housing. This is something that the governor shined a spotlight on, and that's critical to a number of businesses and their interests in either staying here, expanding here, or moving to other parts of the country or parts of the state. We can't subsidize our way out of that problem. One of the things that the governor talked about last year was trying to change some of the regulatory climate at the local level so that we can encourage the development of more affordable housing, because if we don't have an adequate supply of that with a growing population, that higher cost of housing is taking away more share of individuals' income.
But as a group of people sits around a table in Sacramento with green eye shades on and moves numbers around, to go back mm-hmm. to Paul's question, is there an assumption that if these fees, these taxes, these forms of recapture of income are raised, we will lose more people of this kind or that kind?
We are certainly mindful of the business climate in California, and one of the things that we want to do is ensure that we've got, at least from a fiscal standpoint, stability in the budget so that we don't go to the boom and bust cycle that many businesses and many analysts have said has been in the past a detriment to investing in California. They don't know what the state's fiscal structure is going to look like. One of the things that we've been able to do in recent years is provide a fairly good level of fiscal stability in the state where we haven't had the kinds of draconian cuts and uncertainties that people who want to invest here and stay here are looking to find. We've been able to renew our investment in schools, a critical issue for people who are looking to move here for their families. We've been able to renew our investment in state's higher education, which is also a critical issue for businesses, not only for their families who want to have their kids attend school here, but also for the innovation and the technology that comes from those universities. So we're mindful of the business climate, but we're also mindful that one of the things that we can do to improve, make sure that there's a good business climate, is to provide a pretty good level of fiscal stability. And we've been fortunate in recent years that we've been able to do that.
Jessica Calafati, in the debates over funding, particularly colleges and universities in the state, is there a push and a pull between the perception of these things as a net cost or an investment in workforce, in making the state a more attractive place to live, a place where employers want to relocate?
Yes, of course. And to understand what's going on in higher ed, we have to look back to what happened to our higher ed budget in the recession. It was cut to the bone. And then as we came out of the recession, as we came out of the budget crisis, the governor made a deal with UC and CSU that they would hold their tuition and fees flat and would get extra money in exchange. So we're at the end of that period now, and the state and the university systems need to decide how much more money they need to execute their missions. And this is going to be a big fight between the systems and students who say they can't afford to pay another dime into these systems, and the systems that say we need more money to provide what these students expect from us. But surely, on a broader level, there's debate about whether the systems actually need more money or whether they should be rejiggering their budgets and cutting some of their administrative or other costs to be able to provide the students what they deserve.
I'll just note, too, that, you know, voters just approved a slew of taxes on the ballot. I think when you look at the concerns among both businesses and residents, I do think that housing is a big one. And you do see that that is a concern for businesses, you know, maybe looking to expand here. But it doesn't seem as if the tax or regulatory structure has really hurt our economy in the way that a lot of people say, in the sense that we are the sixth largest economy in the world. And we have done far better on a lot of sort of the economic measurements than the national growth and research. In years.
Our next stop this hour, Redwood City. Greg, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for the show. I just want to say, are there any efforts on the table to amend the Prop 13? I think it's ridiculous that, you know, we're allowing these tax benefits for people who are not owner-occupied. So basically the rest of us are paying for their investment, and it's really obviously taking a bite out of all the things that California could be doing. So, you know, so many of these property owners are renting at current market value, but they're paying pennies in taxes.
Greg, let me tell you what Heather wrote in to say. She writes, "I'm sick to death of the attack on Prop 13. Prop 13 allows for a modest increase every year, and taxes are reassessed every time someone remodels or sells property. I have friends on fixed incomes that can barely make their tax bill, even with Prop 13. Heather wants it to stick around for a while. You want it to be revisited."
There you have it, Ray, right? That is the core of the Prop 13 debate. I will say, you know, it's not called the third rail in Sacramento for no reason, but I think Heather and Greg might agree on one thing, which is that maybe the state could look at commercial properties, which is something that more liberal Democrats have advocated in recent years, hasn't gone anywhere. I wouldn't be shocked if there was some move in future years for a ballot measure on that issue. I don't see us revisiting personal property taxes on Prop 13.
Raj is with us now from San Ramon. Raj, welcome to the program. Raj, are you there?
I'm here, sir. I'm from San Ramon.
Go ahead.
Okay, here's my fundamental question. If you really look at the last 10, 15 years of the process or the policies which has happened, taken place in California, my personal thought process is it is the full liberal policies which has led to this kind of deficit. If you really look at it, as you mentioned, as your guest mentioned, seventh richest country, sixth largest in terms of the economics and in terms of the population, we are paying the highest taxes. We overpay for everything in the state. But as a policy, this governor probably has not taken any initiative to look at it piece by piece on the table. What is it they can cut? You pay $3.99 a gallon. Other states pay $1.99 a gallon. Everything is done. $60 billion on health care. Who are these people using these people? Probably a Medicaid, Medi-Cal, required people is maybe around $30 billion. The illegal aspect of it.
Well, Raj, I understand your critique of liberal policies and your critique of high-cost, high-service states. But if you look around the whole country, You and I could visit places like Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas, where both taxes and services are very low compared to California, and people are not flocking to live in those places. Our Los Angeles caller suggested the weather has a lot to do with it, but there's a lot of places with nice weather where no one's moving, even though the taxes are pretty low. Isn't there more to it than that?
I agree with you on that part. But what I'm saying is we have, as the government, everything under control, but we are looking at every single aspect of it. Every budget, if you really look at it, when you have paid this much money, the taxpayers are paying through their noses in the state. But why do we have a deficit? Why are they not really closely looking at it where we are overspending it? $52 billion for school. You can't go to school. Schools, the principals are like hawks attacking you because they need money for everything. But $52 billion in one state of California is a lot of money. $60 billion for health care, I understand the quality of life, the weather, the job, roads, everything. But you know what? This is something, this policy, as a policy, the liberal policies, look at it very closely and say, wait, we got to be a little bit conservative here. Look, why do we have to spend this much money on X and Y and Z when it is not required?
H.D. Palmer, can you talk to a constituent in San Ramon and and maybe give him a way to think about this that helps him out?
Yeah, you bet. There's a lot to unpack in what Raj was covering there. Perhaps a little historical perspective might help a bit, and then we'll bring it up to today. When the governor took office back in 2011, as was noted earlier, he inherited a budget deficit, if we're talking about spending policies of deficit spending and so forth, of about $27 billion due recognizably to the fact of the recession's effect on California's economy. We've been able to close that gap in recent years and actually run a slight surplus. As we note, if we didn't take any action in this budget, if we let things go on autopilot, we'd be facing a deficit of about $1.6 billion. So in order to maintain that kind of fiscal balance that we've gotten back into, the governor's proposed a budget that has a number of solutions to bring it back into balance next year and in future years based on our current projections. And we are prioritizing those things that the governor and the legislature have deemed to be priorities over the last several years. Steady growth for education, the creation of the state's first earned income tax credit, a minimum wage that responsibly will increase to $15 an hour, the expansion of health care coverage to millions of Californians. And in order to continue and accommodate that, the budget that the governor has put on the table calls on pulling back a number of one-time spending commitments that were made in last year's budget, as well as to slow or temper some anticipated spending increases. So if anything, the governor has recognized the fact that if we didn't do anything, if we let things go on the way that they are given current projections, yeah, we'd be in the hole to the tune of about $1.6 billion. But what the governor has put forward is a plan that he believes will bring us back into balance next year and keep us in balance over the long haul.
Raj in San Ramon, thanks for a lot for your call. Don writes, in answer to my earlier question, one of the reasons Gray Davis was recalled was his approval of very generous pension benefits to state employees. This remains a ticking time bomb, one that's already gone off in cities like Stockton and San Bernardino. Carl tweets, California has always been an energy state. Do we have some sort of severance tax, or can we easily increase it? Now, when I lived and worked in Southern California, I used to pass oil pumps on my way to work every day. What is it? How do the extraction industries get taxed, HD, quickly in answer to Carl's tweet?
There's part of the tax system, and I would defer to my friends in the tax agencies to talk about this in greater detail.
But the state does get a taste.
The state does get a taste of it, but in terms of the overall revenue, the biggest bulk of the state's revenue comes from personal income tax. It's nearly 70% of all the revenue that comes into the state from its general fund for its main operating budget comes from personal income tax. So clearly that's the biggest area where, you know, we see an effect positively or negatively on the state's financial fortunes.
Marisa Lagos, we're getting to the end of our time. Should I expect when I get home to be reading in the Washington Post about big Donnybrooks in Sacramento over the coming budget? It seems like even the quibbles from the Republicans are not big things.
Yeah, again, everything's relative. So if you go back just 4 years, as HD just mentioned, there was a $27 billion deficit. We're talking about really, to some extent, pocket change comparatively. And so I do expect there will be debates. There will be expectations from Democratic lawmakers to push the governor towards more spending in some areas. But no, we will not see the budget showdowns that were so familiar just 5 or 10 years ago, in part because it only requires a simple majority to pass a budget. And in part because, as we mentioned before, a lot of the more controversial issues such as transportation will likely be dealt with prior to the bigger budget debate. Now, this is all assuming one big, really big assumption, which is that our Affordable Care Act money doesn't get slashed by Congress. And if that happens, I don't know that it will be a fight among Democrats here, because I think everybody will just be in mourning, but it will be a huge, big change to grapple with and something that everybody is really bracing themselves for in Sacramento.
That's Marisa Lagos. She covers the government in Sacramento for KQED. Marisa, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
H.D. Palmer is with us from the California Department of Finance. H.D., great to talk to you.
Great talking to you, Ray.
And Jessica Calafati covers education for Cal Matters. Jessica, thanks for your help.
Thank you.
And earlier we heard from Assemblymember David Chu of San Francisco. Thanks to all for joining us. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Christina Russo. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Schofer-Wolf. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our executive producer, Holly Kernan. I'm Ray Suarez, in today for Michael Krasny. Thanks a lot for listening. Join us again.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.